Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, D23 Parks panels and presentations announced, pop-up Disney extended, merch shipments have arrived in Batu,
new beignets, an easy way to avoid food allergies, we talk about the Disneyland Railroad, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of July 24th, 2019. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to send a shout out and a big thank you to all of our patrons, including Richard S., for supporting the show. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. Our patrons get some pretty nice perks like access to our Discord chat, live shows, some DL Weekly swag, plus more. If you'd like to learn more, head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
Well, we're working on some cool episodes in the future. We'd like to have you be part of it. We have a couple of questions we would like to hear answers to. If you want to help us out, give us a call at 657-345-4445 with the answer to the question, what is it about Disneyland that keeps you coming back over and over again? And or what are your tips or strategies for when to go to the parks during the year? We've already had some good responses to this, so please keep them coming. We'd like to fill an episode with this. So we're looking forward to all of your responses.
Each week we do this, I'm going to get so excited because this number is going to get smaller and smaller. The countdown is on. We are less than 30 days away from our trip to Disneyland and D23. We are planning a DL Weekly meetup over at the Tongaroa Terrace on Saturday, August 24th at 8 p.m. We hope to see as many of you weekly tiers there.
We're looking forward to recording some information with you guys while you're there, too. So you don't have to be part of it, but it's a possibility that you could be on the show or a part of a special or something like that for being there. So it's going to be very, very exciting to meet all of you guys. We're very, very excited. Well, now let's get to the news. Well, D23 keeps releasing information slowly on all of the panels and presentations for the expo in August. The schedule for the Disney Parks related event includes quite a bit of things. So on Friday the 23rd, the first thing that they're having at the D23 Expo Arena is at 12:30 p.m. and it's the music and sounds of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. At 4 p.m. at Stage 28, there is a Behind the Art of Disney Costuming, Heroes, Villains, and Spaces Between. This one sounds kind of interesting because costuming is super cool.
Saturday, August 24th, the one that I'm looking forward to, and you know you can find me there, 12:30 p.m., Haunted Mansion, celebrating 50 years at the D23 Expo Arena. They know they're going to have a good turnout for that, so it's in the arena. Then following that, at 3:30 p.m., Immersive Worlds, bringing stories to life in Disney parks over at Stage 28. And then at 6 p.m., Travels with Marty, a conversation with the Sklars and Imagineers at Walt Disney Archives Stage. That one sounds fun, too.
Yeah, I would love to. I think we have to try to make this one. He gave us a lot of classic attractions that we all know and love. Finally, on Sunday, August 25th, at 2 p.m. at Stage 28, we have Inspiring Women Behind Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. At 4 p.m. at the Walt Disney Archives Stage, we have Magic Journey, My Fantastical Walt Disney Imagineering Career with Kevin Rafferty. And finally, at 5:30 p.m. At Stage 28, we have Mark Davis, in his own words, Imagineering the Disney theme park. Mark Davis is another Imagineer that is well known for doing stuff.
If you guys are interested and have maybe been on the fence, we are going to be doing all sorts of extra stuff, extra little special things for our patrons and for you guys.
We're going to be putting out a lot of bonus content while we're in California at the end of August. So there'll be a lot of stuff that's just going to be patron only. So if you guys want to get in on that, it's a great time to become a supporter. Obviously, we're going to have a lot of stuff in the regular feed for people as well, but there's going to be a ton of stuff coming out that at least initially is going to be supporter only. So if you have been on the fence and just kind of want to support us throughout this whole trip, this would be a great month to do it. We have some other stuff coming up too, patron changes that we're going to talk about as well at some point, but it's a good month, August, to
Ooh, it's gonna be
a
supporter. Very exciting month. Well, the pop-up Disney, a Mickey celebration, will run through Labor Day, Disney recently announced. So for those of you going to D23 or just to the resort in August, you do have one last chance to experience it. So we were talking about this earlier. We weren't really sure if this was a good sign or a bad sign. I thought, I'm like, wow, it must be really popular. So they decided to extend it out. And Tag thought...
I thought that this might be a situation where they're just trying to recoup their costs. So leaving it open later because maybe it hasn't been attended as well. They didn't. One of the things that was interesting was they didn't really talk about like how many people have been through it. They just said like thousands of photographs have been shared to Instagram and tagged with whatever. But that doesn't really tell you anything. So I don't know. It'll be there when we're there. I personally don't think we're going to go do it.
No, I don't think so either. There's so many other things that we're trying to cram pack. And I mean... It's crazy. We already feel like our schedule is getting really jam-packed, and we're going to be in the park for at least 5 days, plus the expo for 3 days. So really, we're going to be there a long time, but it just there's so many things that we want to do, and unfortunately, this is not one of the things that is high up on the priority list for us.
Although...
But we're not big photo takers.
Yeah.
I mean, if you follow any of our social medias, I think there's like two, maybe three photos that we actually have... Obviously, we'll have more after we're in the parks and have more, you know, more Disney moments, I guess.
Yeah. Now,
watching us sit at the desk doing the podcast may not be the most exciting photos. So,
right.
Versus Sleeping Beauty Castle or with Mickey himself.
Right. Exactly. So, one thing that Teresa found out this week that we may or may not try to do is the Sunday. That we're there in D23 is the last day the Haunted Mansion will be open.
Yes.
So the first day in the park is the first day it's closed, which we kind of thought was probably going to happen. So
I was hoping it was going to be a bigger overlap than that. Not that we would literally be sleeping across the street from it when it was still open. I was hoping, I really had my fingers crossed that it would be closed earlier in August so it wouldn't be as much of a burn. But we did find out, yes, that it will be closing. It will still be open when we first land.
Yeah, so we might have to try to get into the park somehow and scratch that itch. But I don't know. I don't know yet.
We'll see.
I know that you want to.
Of course I do.
Right. Well, it may seem like a lot, but somehow the Millennium Falcon Smuggler's Run attraction in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge has welcomed its 1 millionth guest. The lucky guests were the Ridgeway family from Ocean Springs, Mississippi. The family of four got to meet with Chewbacca in the main hold before the ride, and were treated to free blue and green milk afterwards.
It was cute because the 1 millionth rider was actually one of the sons. So I thought that was very cute that it was a kid was the one that got to be the honored guest. So cool for them. It looks like they have a couple cute little porgs, too. I wonder if they had just happened to adopt them while they were on Batuu or if they were given the free porgs, too. But anyways, very cool. It seems to me, I don't know, I'm both... surprised and also shocked a little bit. I was surprised that we've already hit 1 million people that have experienced this attraction.
That seems like a short time.
But then, yeah, I felt like it was very short, but then I was also like, wow, you know, with how big of the lines were, I would have almost thought that this would have happened much sooner. So, I don't know.
It just makes me happy that they have a good amount of capacity, apparently, to plow through a million people in that time.
And we've been so fortunate watching the wait times that they haven't been insane. So obviously, whatever they did with this attraction is working.
I have.
And is getting the people through quickly.
I have been seeing online that the park has been getting steadily busier because people are realizing that it's not very busy. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little sad that we may not get to experience the joys of
the calm before the storm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, we're gonna get there in the storm.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe we'll be in the eye of the storm. That's usually a safe place.
I mean, you know, we're probably going to get there. So the week we're there, it'll be the weekend after probably will be the one that is the busy weekend because it's the last weekend before school starts for a lot of people.
Oh, sure.
And it's a holiday weekend. So that'll probably be a busy time. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll get lucky and right after.
Maybe we'll be like a calm before.
I'm hoping everybody is going to the park before D23 and not after D23.
It's a flip of a coin on that one.
Yep.
Well, one of the complaints about Galaxy's Edge when it first debuted was the lack of atmospheric music. This seems to be changing ever so slightly as some of the sounds from the cantina in Docking Bay 7 have been expanded into the areas around those establishments.
Yeah, so I know that this is some, there's some people, I have not experienced the land myself, so mm-hmm. I can't comment directly on this, but a lot of people online have been disappointed that unlike most areas of Disneyland, that there is some type of background music that provides atmosphere, that there was really nothing in Galaxy's Edge, because in a quote unquote real world, you don't have background music generally.
Which,
so they're trying to keep it thematically appropriate, I guess. However, I feel like this is one of those things that people will understand if they break from thematically appropriate to have some background music. Yep. So I think that they're slowly starting to expand it. There's been some pleas online that people want Disney to just try music and see and like survey guests and find out if they care. And I think that they would find that it's going to be like most things. I think as Galaxy's Edge is open for a while, I think that they're going to find a balance between trying to make it something totally unique and in-world and seem very realistic and being a daily operating theme park. So I think that like they'll find a balance of stuff. I think they will add music. I think they probably will get to a point where they play fireworks music and stuff in there as well. I just think that in the beginning, they really wanted it to be something special and this kind of otherworldly feeling. But I think they're going to eventually, I think operations is eventually going to overrule that.
So I've only been once, and this is the only thing I know I can think of
to Galaxy's Edge.
No. To the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. And I can't remember if they have atmospheric music as you're walking around.
Producer James, do you remember? Wizarding World of Harry Potter, did they have atmospheric music?
I mean, I was there once for one day, so I really don't have that strong of memory.
Yeah, there was definitely music, especially as you got into the queues for the attractions. That's really where they started pumping it. But I definitely remember music around certain areas of Diagon Alley. It might have only been indoors, but I'm not confident in that. But I definitely know we heard a lot of the theme music.
Hmm. So maybe it's similar then.
I don't think playing just in Star Wars music in a Star Wars land will take me out of the feeling of being there. If anything, it just kind of
keep hearing the same like
recurring
themes. I like that.
It'd be like Main Street, like where you have like a playlist.
It's own unique thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But what I'm thinking is like, so like Emperor's New Groove, where Kronk is like doing his little thing and he's got his little like theme music, right? He's like, right? Like, I feel like for a guest in Galaxy's Edge, hearing that Star Wars music would just like make you feel even more there because the music is such an integral part to the movies.
But would you want to be hearing music from the movies or something different? I would want to hear something different. I don't think I'd want to hear whatever the dun, 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 dun,
the Imperial March.
The very classic Star Wars movie.
Well, but they could make music. They could make a lot of things like in the movies when they have like background music for scenes, they could play that kind of stuff.
Similar to that. But
I'm just saying right now, I don't think they really play anything. Some of the popular items in Galaxy's Edge have been restocked this week. Most colors of Kyber Crystal's Android personality chips are now back in stock and ready for purchase. I am so happy to see these are back in stock because building a lightsaber is on my list, and I was worried that I wasn't going to be able to get a couple Kyber crystals.
Definitely worried. So they must have had some sort of back corner that they had these stocked, and it just took them a little while to get to them.
Well, you know, I heard that there was some shipment delays from Coruscant, and things got held up by some smugglers. So I'm glad that they finally reached Batuu.
Well, as the 2020 opening date looms, Marvelland construction is shifting into high gear. The area in front of Mission Breakout has been placed behind construction walls, causing the queue for the attraction to have a different configuration. The building that will house the upcoming Spider-Man attraction is behind Scrims and is getting drywall installed.
So this is kind of moving.
Yeah. It, you know, so the photo, obviously, again, we haven't been there, but the photos that I saw online that I believe was Mice Age, or Mice Chat, had posted, seems a little weird. You kind of just like walk into it. Felt before like you walked into a dead end because there just was nothing beyond, you know, Mission Breakout.
Mm-hmm.
But now, like, the walls have actually come in front of Mission Breakout. Mm-hmm. So I wonder how many people actually aren't certain if that attraction is open or not. So hopefully they've got good signing and there's cast members that are still, you know, letting you know, yes, come on, come through here. This is how you get into the attraction now. Because I could see how it is a little confusing because you are kind of you feel like you're walking behind these construction walls to get to this attraction.
Right.
So maybe this is a good time to go ride Mission Breakout. Maybe mm-hmm. a lot of people aren't going on it, so wait times are down. I don't know.
I'm wondering what they're doing that's causing the walls to go out that far. It's such a long way.
Well, is it something with the road? Are they doing something?
Maybe. I assume that they're working on, because this is the section that kind of butted up against A Bug's Land before. Yeah. And so I'm wondering if they need to do some more work to kind of get that configured how they want it.
Well, where's the entrance to this land actually going to be? That's what I've been trying to figure out. Sorry, I am on Hollywood Boulevard at the T intersection with Sunset Boulevard. So I'm looking, the Hyperion is right in front of me. So to my right is where Mission Breakout is. Where do you place the entrance to Marvel Land? Is it in between the theater and Mission Breakout, or do they have it butted back to where like the Bugs Land entrance was?
I think what's going to happen in the future is I think this whole Hollywood section is going to be Marvel. So I think the entrance here right off of Buena Vista, I think Hollywood Boulevard's
going to be moving to yesteryear.
Yeah, yesteryland. Yep, yep. So I think right where, because there's an area here right past the Carthay Circle, if you're coming off of Buena Vista Street and you're going down Hollywood Boulevard, there was an area here that used to be a sign that said Hollywood Land.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they moved it over here now. But I'm thinking that's where, because I'm pretty sure that all of this back here with Monsters, Inc. and the stage that's over here,
dang,
I think all of this is going to be themed to some type of Avengers, Marvel, something. And then as you come around the animation building, this obviously with the tower is going to be part of that. And then, of course, all of A Bug's Land is going to be, you know, Spider-Man and everything. So you're going to have an entrance to Marvel Land out of Radiator Springs, or next to Radiator Springs, I guess. You're going to have an entrance from Radiator Springs that's going to attach to it. And then you're going to have one from
the main entrance.
So you're going to have like three different entrances to it.
So you're thinking that Hollywood Land is going to eat up like half of the park.
Marvel Land.
Oh, yeah, sorry. That Marvel Land is going to eat up half of the park. So not only is
I think it's
going to
eat up this whole corner, yes.
It's going to take up the back lot, and it's going to take up
Well, if you look at how big Cars Land is here, it's only a little bit bigger than Cars Land if you kind of, because this is the show building for it, and this is Cars Land.
Yeah.
So if you take that and move it up, it's kind of the same size.
Wow.
That's my thought. I think we'll know.
I don't know if that thought's too far off, though, because think of your theming. You're not going to have hardly any street stuff. So it's kind of, you know, Hollywood Boulevard is basically the main street USA of DCA, but it's going
to Carthay Circle is. Or Carthay.
Yeah, it kind of is, but I feel like there's way more shops and things to do. It's more Main Street-esque over there.
I suppose.
It's longer. There's more things to do. I don't know. But yeah, I get what you're saying, where that one is more, you know, that's your entrance street that everybody's got to go down. But I'm talking just shopping-wise.
Yeah.
But yeah, because I mean, I do think the back lot is going to be taken over. I feel bad because I think the poor monsters are going to be relocated at some point. Because they
evicted.
Have those very,
I don't know if they're going to relocate them.
Yeah, that's true. They're probably just going to go back to Monstropolis. But you're right, because a lot of the things back there are looking very permanent. I mean, you've got the meet and greets that they've got with mm-hmm. Marvel characters are to the left of the Hyperion Theater, which what are they going to do about that? Is that going to be some sort of Marvel theme show now?
I think what they'll do is, I think that this whole facade and stuff that they will, over the course of the next few years, theme this, maybe even make it into kind of less of a facade and more of a real theater kind of thing, where you could, I mean, you'll still enter on the side just because they'd have to do a lot of work to make it otherwise. I don't know. They haven't announced anything. Okay. I'm hoping that we will find out at D23. I'm hoping they will talk a little bit more about what their plans are, or at least about what the plans for the Spider-Man attraction are, because we really haven't heard too much about it yet.
I'm still excited that they were doing a casting call for aerial artists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this building here, this is the old Tough to Be a Bug Theater. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is where that Spider-Man attraction is. And then whatever they're going to do over here. Plus, I mean, it's going to be huge. I'm with you. It's crazy.
Well, to be continued, I guess, on that discussion.
Yeah, so It'll be interesting. Well, last week, Disneyland celebrated its 64th anniversary. The day included a happiest march on Earth with the Dapper Dans, the resort ambassadors, characters, the Disneyland band, and more. There were also cupcakes and other sweets on hand for the event. 64 years, it's not a milestone. It's not like every 5 years it's thing. Exciting, so they kind of just do it.
Yeah, no, it's still definitely exciting. I do think that I did read online that they were very pleased with the turnout, with it being such, you know, kind of a slew of lower crowds this summer. They did feel like that the attendance for the park was increased on that day. So a lot of people came out to celebrate the park and its 64 years of bringing us joy and happiness. So I think that's great. I'm glad that they do, even though it isn't a milestone, I am glad that they do some sort of celebration each year. I think that's great.
Absolutely.
Well, annual pass holders can get a new exclusive mug now through September 5th. The mug includes 99-cent refills on fountain soda, regular coffee, hot tea, or hot chocolate when presented with your annual pass. You can see the link in our show notes for more detail. The mug itself is very cool. I would just, even if it wasn't free refills, I would be wanting to buy this mug. I think it is very cute. And it, I believe it's only like $14.99 plus tax for the mug originally, which I don't think is that bad of a deal just to buy a reusable mug, period. And then the fact on top of it that you get 99-cent refills, so very cool.
It's available through when we're there. Are you going to find someone with an annual pass?
I don't think I will do that because if you read the fine print, you only get to purchase one of these mugs per pass.
But what happens if they don't want it?
Oh, okay. Maybe if they don't want it, then
because I could see you rocking this at work.
Oh, for sure I would. For sure I would. That would be my work cup.
Quite a list of locations where you can buy it or get refills. I feel like it's almost every location in the park.
Yeah. So in Disneyland, there are just over 20 locations. At a quick count, I counted 21 different places that you can either purchase or get refills only for this mug.
And nine over, in California Adventure.
Yeah, California Adventure's got nine. There's a ton of them, and they're big places. Like over in California Adventure, Award Wieners, Paradise Garden Grill. Back over in Disneyland, you've got the Harbor Gallery, Hungry Bear, Jolly Holiday,
Plaza Inn.
The Plaza Inn, the Red Rose Tavern, Rancho del Zocalo. I mean, lots and lots of people. Lots and lots of places. We even have the Golden Horseshoe, Docking Bay 7, and Ronto Roasters. So, very cool. Not all of these places, again, we will have the link in our show notes. Not all of these places can you purchase the mug, but you can refill the mug for 99 cents at these places. So, if you're an AP holder that goes pretty frequently, this would be a very, you know, and do a lot of soda, tea, or coffee drinking, this might be a good investment for you.
You know what they need to do? They need to do like our local movie theater does. They need to offer or even for regular guests, not even annual pass holders, but they need to offer like a cup that you can buy for $20 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you get 99-cent refills for like the rest of the year.
That would be cool.
Because
it would probably be a very expensive cup though, because...
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Maybe not. I was going to say, because your average guest is probably only there for like... I'm going to just totally take a shot in the dark.
Sure.
Average guest may be only there for like, we'll say three the average visit is 3 days.
Sure.
And, but yes, you do have all the APs that would be there quite frequently, but really how much does soda actually cost?
Not that much.
I think they'd still and they're be not
paying
ahead.
And they're not paying all the fees for the paper cups and the paper straws.
More
and
eco-friendly.
Everything. Yep. Well, the Mint Julep Bar has yet another new flavor of beignet. The new sour cherry beignet is the classic pastry, but covered in sour cherry sugar. There is no dipping sauce with this one, and you might need it. Reports are that it's just a little too sour by itself. So they were saying that it tasted like, what is that candy that like you open and it's like the sugar and you just like...
Pixie sticks?
It's like pixie sticks. Thank you. But it's like a sour pixie stick. So it's not that normal like powder sugar consistency, so it was more like sugary consistency, and because there was no dipping sauce, it was just very sweet and then very sour.
Well, and then probably kind of dry too, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I mean, one of the cool things about the beignet though is that they're usually a little like doughier inside.
Yeah, but still. Ooh,
I do like me a Disneyland beignet though.
I don't know if this would be one that we're gonna have to try when we're there.
I don't want to try.
I don't think I could do it.
James, are you a sour cherry beignet taster?
No, probably not.
Yeah.
Some flavors I just don't get as excited for, and sour cherry is one of them.
Yeah. Well, does Vern like sour cherry?
Oh, he'll eat anything. So if somebody in the group just is really wanting to try it and they don't like it, he would at least try it. It would have to be pretty bad for him not to finish it.
Is there anything he doesn't like?
Nothing I can think of off the top of my head.
He's good to have then.
Yeah.
And he eats a lot because he's a runner. Mm-hmm. So he's like, he could pack down stuff and not gain
anything.
Very
high metabolism too. So always hungry. Well, a new place to pick up some grub has opened in Frontierland. The new pretzel cart has taken up residence near Big Thunder Mountain and Galaxy's Edge. Seems like a really great place to catch a snack on the way to a galaxy far, far away. Plus, you can't get Mickey-shaped pretzels on Batuu. They don't know what those are. So you got to sneak one in.
You know, I would have thought this was a better place to put a outdoor vending cart if, like, we were still having, like, the issues of, like, so many people showing up. They had to have reservations to
get
the land.
Yeah, I feel like they were a little late on this one. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been good, you're right, to have this there on opening day and opening week for all the people hanging out waiting to get their chance to go in to experience the land.
You know, I'm trying to think the last time I was there. There's lots of popcorn outdoor vending carts and like churro carts and stuff, but I feel like there's not a lot of pretzel carts.
I don't feel there's as many. We could be wrong. We could count when we're there.
Are we going to like walk around and take inventory of all their outdoor vending?
Why not?
Well, the Disney food blog pointed out this week that some of the restaurants around Walt Disney World and Disneyland have put their menus, including allergy information, online. The food is broken down into categories with different allergens for ease of use.
You know, I don't know why. I think I was looking at Carthay Circle's restaurant. I think I was looking at their menu online. For some reason, I just happened to come across this before it was announced that they were doing this. And I thought, I'm like, wow, somebody did a lot of work in here, because it is broken down to, if you have a gluten or wheat allergy, this is the section of menu for you. If it's egg allergies, I mean, there was egg allergy, that's not as common as, like, say, peanut or milk or even fish or shellfish. Uh-huh. But they had different sections to their menu that basically said this, you know, these are the things that would be good for you. Uh-huh. I was very impressed by that and thought, wow, somebody took a lot of time to create this menu and then to categorize it and do all this. I think it's great. Makes it super easy. I'm sure it saves the wait staff and the service counter people a lot of time. Uh-huh. Instead of trying to learn the menu so that they know exactly which things are friendly to which, you know, diets and allergies and all that stuff, you know.
Absolutely.
Kudos to them. Good for them.
Yeah. And I know, like, Producer James, we have a sister-in-law who's got a gluten allergy, and then her husband's got a milk allergy. So I feel like this would be great, because then they can see exactly what they can eat.
And everything to just make it easy for people, I feel like, is always a good choice.
Yeah. Yeah. I am I'm very thankful that I do not have a allergy. Oh, James, for you, peanut/tree nut allergy friendly.
Well, that's always good. With my intolerance to tree nuts, that's a definite win for me.
There you go. All right, well, now we take a trip to Trivia Land, where Producer James tries to stump us with Disney trivia. He'll read us the question, we'll attempt to answer them, and then James will give us the correct answers after the discussion topic. What do you have for us this week, James? Is it a bunch of listener questions, or is it a bunch of you questions?
We're half and half this week.
So
our first question comes from listener Richard S. And no, it's
Richard.
Not a Small World question.
Yay.
It's true or false? The famous Disney turkey leg has its origins in Disneyland.
Yes.
Oh, you mean like versus world versus land?
It started at Disneyland first.
Yes.
Kind of like how Doritos started in Disneyland?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to say
false.
True. Right. Just because. And that, so one of us will be right.
Someone's getting a point this week. Our second question comes from me. Hey, it's my question. The levels of the Mickey Friends parking structure include Chippendale, Daisy, and four members of the Fab Five. Who's been left out?
Well, there's Donald level and Mickey and Minnie. Is it Pluto or Goofy? I want to say Goofy.
I figured this was going to be a quick home run for Tig with his love of the parking structure.
Can you ask the question again?
Sure. The levels of the Mickey and Friends parking structure include Chippendale, Daisy, and four members of the Fab Five. Who's been left out?
I'm going to say Donald, because why are Mickey and Minnie together, but Daisy's by herself?
Well, Mickey and Minnie are separate, aren't they?
Correct.
Yeah, oh. Make you into your separate levels.
How many levels are there? For someone who has never been to the parking garage.
There's six levels.
Chip and Dale share a level. Everyone else is on their own.
Oh, okay.
This is my favorite part to edit of the podcast every week because it's a lot of just Teresa thinking.
Thoughtful pondering.
Yeah. Well, and speaking out loud, working through her thoughts.
I say Pluto. I don't know why.
I don't think Pluto because I think I've seen... So I'm in my mind, in where the tram picks you up, at the bottom of the escalators, they have these circles showing like...
How could you get rid of Goofy?
But I don't think Goofy is one of the people I've seen. I think I've seen Pluto, Mickey and Minnie, Donald, Daisy.
Yeah, I'm sticking with Pluto.
Okay. But Chip and Dale is kind of a weird like set of people to kind of squeeze in there.
Maybe, but they're kind of classic characters in the park.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, but there's lots of classic characters that aren't in, I don't know.
True. All right. Anyway, question number three comes from Daniel. And Daniel wants to know how many years the Flying Saucers attraction ran for.
I want to say, it only ran for like a year.
I was going to say, I don't think it was long.
If I say a year and it was less than a year, does that still count?
Sure, I'll give you that.
Okay. I think it was a year.
I'm going to say three.
All right. And our last question this week, which country did most of the hand-carved horses from the carousel come from?
The first thing that popped in my head, and that's what I'm going to say, is I'm going to say Germany.
That was the first thing that popped in my head.
So you're going to say Germany?
We'll say Germany.
See if you two are on the same wavelength or not. We'll have more, or we'll have the answers to this week's trivia questions after our discussion topic.
Well, this week for our discussion topic, we are talking about the history of the Disneyland Railroad. And so Teresa, when she...
Tons of history.
There's tons of history. It was funny because when Teresa and I were talking about what to discuss this week, we threw out some ideas back and forth. And Teresa said, Disneyland Railroad, even if we do no research, you could just talk about your love for the railroad. And it'll be great.
I knew we'd be fine. This could be the longest discussion topic ever if we allowed it to be.
There is a ton of information about the road. I think part of that is...
So much.
I think part of that is because people... Walt, of course, first off. Mm-hmm. Walt, but I think there are a lot of train enthusiasts still in the
definitely.
World. So I think that because there's not that many like steam operating railroads around anymore, mm-hmm. and there's five engines operating at Disneyland, I think it's just something that people have a lot of knowledge about because... If you're a train enthusiast, you probably have researched or read something about Disneyland's trains at some point, would be my guess. So what are some of the facts about the train?
First thing, so this is an opening day attraction. It did open with Disneyland back in July of 1955. This was kind of interesting to me, and we'll kind of get into this more in depth as to which engines they designed. But the designer, of course, was Wed Enterprises. They actually built a couple of the trains. For some reason, mm-hmm. I thought all of these trains were repurposed, but some of them are original to Wed Enterprises. Really, really cool. The original name for the attraction, as many of you might already know, was the Santa Fe and Disneyland Railroad. It was called that from 1955 to 1976. Santa Fe actually, I think, did a lot of, they kind of like sponsored mm-hmm. The railroad. So that's why their name was attached to it. As Tag already mentioned, there are five locomotives currently. Track length is 1.2 miles.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty good. Show length. We had a laugh about this one. The show length is listed for 18 minutes. And I said to Tag, there is no way that that's only 18 minutes. Think of how much time you sit at each station waiting for people to load and unload, which is fine, you know, totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that must just be moving time is 18 minutes.
Yeah, I would think so.
The required ticket. This is another thing that I thought was interesting because tickets, I forget that the park operated on the ticket system.
Yeah.
It was a required D ticket. I kind of always thought that the railroad was one of those things that you could just enjoy.
Well, I thought the railroad actually was like an A or a B ticket, but apparently it was a D ticket. Well, because
that's so everybody could enjoy it then.
Right. But like a D ticket back in the day before the 1959 expansion that we've talked about, mm-hmm. The D ticket was like the highest level ticket you could have. Like, there was no E-ticket. E-tickets were introduced with the sub-voyage.
I was thinking backwards. You're right. Yeah, you're right. I was thinking backwards.
No, an A-ticket was the cheap
high,
one.
You know, like grades. But yeah, no, I got that mixed up. Yeah, you're right. That is weird. Especially because it was basically a motive. It was more of an attraction then than it is now. Now it's kind of like 50-50. It's a it's an attraction, but it's also a mode of transportation because you can get to different parts of the park with it. But yeah, I would,
I would say about 50-50% of the time is probably about the time I use it for mode of transportation. Because I feel like I ride it at least 3 or 4 times every time I'm there. And the first time I ride it, I think I ride it Grand Circle Tour because I like the ride aspect of it, of like seeing the whole park from the train and all that stuff.
I agree.
And then later on, it's like, oh, we're in New Orleans Square and we want to get to Tomorrowland. Let's just hop on the train and get to the other side of the park. But it's not that quick.
Right.
So like you could probably walk there in the same time it would take for the train to get around.
Probably faster. You can walk there depending on the day.
Well, you know what? This might be a false memory of mine, but I feel like when I used to go when I was younger, I feel like the train used to go a lot faster than it does nowadays. Like, I feel like they go pretty pokey now because I feel like they used to just really kind of open it up and just like haul butt between the different things. And I feel like now, like, it kind of goes slow. It does pick up some speed around the Rivers of America, but I feel like around the rest of the park, like between Fantasyland and Tomorrowland, it kind of goes slow, and Tomorrowland to Main Street Station, it kind of goes slow. I don't know. I just remember, and maybe it was because I was a kid and everything seemed faster.
Probably.
Anyway, so we're going to break the conversation up into a few different things. So we're going to talk about the kind of the history and just kind of talking about the railroad to begin with. We're going to talk about the layout and how it's changed a few times over the course of the years. We're going to talk about the different locomotives because there's a lot of information about that.
Lots of history with those too.
Yes. And then we're going to talk about the different stations. Now, I'm excited for the stations because I have some opinions about the stations. But
I can't wait to hear those.
Right. So the railway was constructed at a cost of $240,000, and each of the original 4 locomotives cost in excess of $40,000 to build or restore. Again, like Teresa said, they built a couple of them, and a couple were restored from other systems.
Still crazy. But it is a narrow gauge railroad. It has steam engines, I guess, would be a good way of explaining it. So, yeah, and it was designed to be, like we kind of said, 50-50 transportation, but then also it had the Grand Circle Tour, so it was also an attraction. It is really, I think it is really nice how they have all the different theming and how you kind of get to sneak peek into some of the attractions now. Obviously, they didn't, they weren't able to do all of that when it first opened, but for some reason, I really enjoy being able to look into Splash Mountain, and every time I'm on the attraction and I'm in the big finale room of Splash Mountain, when I remember, because you know how distracted I get, I try to look up to see if I can catch any of the catch a train going past and like wave at them,
right?
Because I find it fun to like look down at the people, so I would think it'd be fun if I was waving up at the train.
That brings up a good point. So something that a lot of people don't know is cast members are told whenever the train comes by or the monorail that you're supposed to turn and wave at the people on the thing. So I like to wave as well. So it's not just the cast members having to do it. But that's one of the fun things when you're on the train. You're just going to wave at everybody and they wave back to you. Now, one thing that I do like about this, they do compare it to the monorail. But the monorail, you're required to get off at Tomorrowland no matter what.
They kick you off.
Where the train, literally, you could go first thing in the morning and just ride the thing all day long in circles if you wanted to. And I kind of like that. Like, maybe one day you just kind of want to have a relaxing couple of circle tours. What? You would never do that.
I couldn't sit still that long. There are so many things to do. I'd be like, oh, but look, actually, funny side story. Sure. And it is, sorry, it's not Disneyland. Last time I was in Walt Disney World with my family, we were there right after Vern had run the marathon. And my uncle had run it too. And our first day in the Magic Kingdom, for some reason, I always feel like to get my bearings of the park, I always want to do a Grand Circle tour.
Sure.
So a lot of my family members either hadn't been for a while or maybe this was their first time at the park. So the plan was to do the Grand Circle tour, but I think it was like the first stop, maybe the second stop. I got too excited because there was a e-ticket attraction. It was the Big Thunder Mountain Railroad.
Sure.
And the train stopped and there was no line. You could walk right onto it. And so I got way too excited. So I said, we're going, even though we had fast passes for it later in the day, because Walt Disney World, you know, you can plan them out. Like, you get like 3 or whatever that you can pick, choose per day. That was one of our tickets, but I said, nope, doesn't matter. We're going now. So yeah, so I got, that's how, like, squirrel, that's how distracted I get.
So we're going to have blinders on you.
Well, hopefully we will. I don't know. It depends on when we do the train. Sure. I just get so excited that if it's the first thing, I can't sit still long enough to do the full circle tour.
Now, did you say you do that when you first get there to Disneyland too?
Sometimes. Depends on the day. My first day, usually, I don't know. It depends on how I'm feeling. Sometimes I like to do a loop around just to kind of like enjoy the park before getting into the meat of the park. Mm-hmm. Other times I just want to like go right in and get on the first attraction that I can. In Adventureland, of course.
I don't think I could tell you if I get on the train right away and right.
Like, I'm the always first tempted.
I do think it is one of the most welcoming things is to be there standing in line to get in the turnstiles and the train like shows up. Like there's just something magical
about
a train showing up and like with the bell ringing and stuff. And then like the announcement. I love the announcement.
Well, and it's just such a picturesque background too. If you're standing there looking up at the backside of the train station and then the train pulls in, you've got the big floral Mickey head right in front of you. You've got all the characters kind of in that little pavilion area right in front of you. It's perfect. It's almost as good as that first glimpse of the castle.
That's true. Yeah, but it's cool because you can see the train station and the train without even getting into Disneyland, which is nice. Yeah,
exactly. It like builds the excitement.
So there's only two times that they've like kind of closed it for an extended period of time. The first time was in the very beginning of 2005 because they had to do some restoration to bring the road bed back to gauge in time for the happiest homecoming on Earth. So that was the 50th anniversary. So that was the longest prolonged closure of the railroad in park history up to that point. And then from January 10th, 2016 to July 29th, 2017, they closed it to make the change to the tracks and everything to accommodate Star Wars Galaxy's Edge in the northwest section of Frontierland. So that was really kind of painful. But one cool thing they did with that one was that they put the locomotives at the stations people could come. You and I were
excited about the little animatronic beavers that they added.
The death beavers that are like eating the bridge that's going to kill you.
those beavers.
But they parked the locomotives at Main Street Station and Frontierland Station, so you could like
go
and check it out. Yep.
The beavers are adorable.
Oh, geez. So one of the main things that they changed in the layout of the track over the course of the years was at one point there was actually in different sections, there was actually two tracks at the station. So if, let's say, Frontierland had a train at the station, the other train could come and pass it and keep going. So they had that at the different stations when it first opened. In fact, at Main Street Station, there's that section of track that kind of goes there where the cart thing is now. They used to be able to go around that.
Interesting.
Yeah, isn't that neat?
That is cool.
But they don't really do that anymore. So it's only used to display the hand car now. The actual layout of the track, so pretty much, not so much anymore, but originally everything was to be inside of the berm kind of and the train.
It encased Disneyland.
Yeah. So the original drawing by Herb Ryman shows a train. It's always been part of Disneyland was a train, even when it was, before it was even Disneyland, when it was like, what was the park
Mickey
called?
Mouse Park.
Mickey Mouse Park. There was a train.
Yep.
And so in the original concept drawing of Disneyland, there's a train going all the way around. Later on, when they added a lot more detail, it kind of is more similar to what we see nowadays with the route.
It's still all the way around, just a different shape. The first shape of the park and of the railroad was almost more, I don't know, it was almost more square-like, I'm going to say.
Sure.
Than what it is today. Almost kind of. And not really. It's kind of like
blobby.
A square. I was gonna say blob, but that's not very, very good. It was kind of if a square and a circle combined somehow. Sure.
It's like a drop of water that kind of.
It's got the four kind of flat sides but rounded corners.
Sure.
So
and some curves. There's a little bit of curves.
A little bit of curves, but not anything like what it looks like today.
No.
Then the next one that we see. It's starting to take shape because right now I kind of think of it, it's not this way anymore because of Galaxy's Edge. But it was, like you said, kind of diamond shaped. You had three big swooping corners, and then the point was kind of down at the main,
by Main Street.
Yeah, Main Street and by the main entrance there. Then it kind of fanned out from there. The one in between has one of those big swoops over by the Rivers of America, but then it was still kind of rounded blobby on the mm-hmm. other Tomorrowland side. But the drawing in 1955, or actually the aerial shot here from 1955, we get that diamond shape again.
Yep. And something that I always forget when I think about the train station or the train track from back in the day was now kind of north of Tomorrowland, I guess you would say, slightly west of It's a Small World. Now the monorail and the train share the same roundhouse in the back, and the train goes off here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where in the original thing, it was kind of back where Galaxy's Edge is now, was the original roundhouse.
Kind of back behind Rivers of America there.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that also is mind-boggling to me, too, is looking at these aerial shots and some of these shots of, you know, people on the train in the beginnings mm-hmm. of Disneyland, was how open a lot of the spaces were. There were not that many trees. It was, I don't know, you were kind of almost on display. Now I feel like you kind of sneak around the park on the train because you're kind of back in between things. You're peeking into attractions. Mm-hmm. You're going around this and over that. I mean, this was just kind of out, well, like a train is. It's just kind of out in the open.
Yeah, you really only see the train nowadays. You only see the train on Main Street. At the train station, above Critter Country, kind of going above the entrance to Galaxy's Edge, right by It's a Small World, and then like very short a little bit in Tomorrowland, and then that's kind of it. Where I was actually surprised when I went to Magic Kingdom and Disney World that there's a lot of sections of the train track there that are more open, like Disneyland really was. Like, there was a whole section that was like the train just went through a whole giant patch of grass. And I was like, this is way more open than Disneyland.
Yep.
But I think that relates to the fact that Disneyland is, you know, size.
Growing, yes.
So the first time it kind of moved any of the track was when they installed the Grand Canyon diorama and Primeval World. It did kind of bump the track out just a little bit to kind of go into that show building. Because if you look at an aerial shot before, it was more
steeper
straight.
Angle.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so they kind of bumped it out a little bit, added some more backstagey looking areas there where kind of Space Mountain and stuff would eventually be. One of the cool things, too, is the Frontierland station is still there today, but it's actually on the other side of the tracks, because the station that's there today that you could see is actually used to be the actual station that you'd walk up to and get your tickets and go in and everything. Mm-hmm. And now that station is across the tracks.
And it's just kind of a set piece. You're right, because, it's just kind of a canopy, kind of a waiting area now. Mm-hmm. It's not an actual station.
The second time it looks like it was moved out after the Grand Canyon was when when New Orleans Square was starting to be constructed. It looks like they rerouted that out just a little bit more to give New Orleans Square some space and to get ready for things like the Haunted Mansion and everything back there. Because if you look here, this is where New Orleans Square is going to be, so it's going to bump that out a little bit. It kind of made it more uniform, like the original kind of diamond was.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Moving along past that, after that got in, the next one was in 1966. And this was actually, I always forget about this. For some reason, I always, in my mind's eye, I always think of it being that kind of diamond shape.
Yeah.
But in real life, they bumped it out north of Fantasyland, because it used to go right behind Casey Jr. Circus Train and the Storybook Canoa Boats. It used to go right behind
there.
But now it goes past where the Fantasyland
Theater
is.
They pushed it out for Small World, the Fantasyland Theater, and then
Future Expansion.
Yeah, Future Expansion areas.
Yeah, so I always forget about that. And that's also when the Roundhouse, it looks like, was moved, was kind of around that time frame, too, because it was still over here in 1962, but then by the time 1966 hit, the Roundhouse had been moved back behind
like Autopia area there.
Yep. And this is what you were talking about. This is that open area after It's a Small World open. There's a picture we have, we'll have linked in our show notes, that shows kind of how open the back area of Disneyland was. It doesn't even look like, if you told me that was, like, I wouldn't even know.
Honestly, I didn't know that was It's a Small World until you said, look, it's a Small World. It didn't even look right to me. Like, that's how different it looked.
Now, for a lot of years, from 1966 to 2016, there was no other changes to the track.
Yeah, there weren't any major, the layout of the track, major changes to the layout of the track until, no, that's not, he doesn't live there. until, of course, when they just rerouted it for Galaxy's Edge. They did it is mind-boggling to me how much work they did to kind of prepare to add this new land. They moved a river. They moved the train. So many big iconic things had to get shifted and reshaped that were not easy to shift and reshape. It's amazing to me. But because of that, we've got my little friends, the Beavers, that now live in the new bridge that's over back in the Rivers of America section. I think that's great that they, yes, they, you know, had to shift things around, but they also added some new magical elements to it as well.
You were there when Pixar Pier opened, or before Pixar Pier opened. Did you, were you able to actually ride that new section track? Yeah. What did you think?
You know,
other than the Beavers,
the thing that I really enjoyed about it was the fact that the last time I had ridden the train, of course, was prior to this. So it was, I don't want to say the original track, but what I felt the original track was, it was the only track that I had ever been on.
Sure.
It didn't feel that far different from me. Hmm. If I didn't know, and if I couldn't see that the path was slightly different, it wasn't very apparent to me that the path was different, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like, oh, we're turning. You know, I didn't feel like a chunk was missing. Like if you look at an aerial shot, there is kind of now a divot in the path that the train goes because of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. If they would have kept that corner and that area how it was, you would have been going right through the marketplace and practically into the Millennium Falcon. So obviously they couldn't keep that up. So yeah, I don't know. It flowed very nicely. I think they did a very good job with it.
Yeah. And to be clear, for people that are kind of trying to think, if they're not looking at the links that we have in the show notes, the divot that Teresa was describing is basically the train comes up and goes through Splash Mountain and then makes a fairly sharp right to kind of come around the bend of the Rivers of America.
Follows the bend of Rivers of America.
And goes towards Big Thunder Mountain. Then it, for the first time in history, takes a left.
It takes its first left, just ever so slightly.
Yep, and goes...
You don't even really notice it that much.
Right? And goes up towards the Fantasyland Theater, then kind of curves back and goes back along the regular route there. So I would actually say that it looks like it added some distance on the track. If you look at the, you know, compared to where the old one was. Yeah, I feel like it adds just a little bit of a tiny distance.
That's where that point two comes. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right.
Oh, now we're going to move on to Tag's favorite. I'm curious as to why this is your favorite section of this discussion.
I just like talking about the stations.
Train stations.
Because one of my favorite buildings in all of Disneyland is the Main Street Station. I love...
And now you have your own.
Oh, I was like, what are you pointing at? Yes. So for those people, because we're not doing a live stream or anything, we don't have a camera. Teresa, tomorrow, we're recording this on Tuesday night. Tomorrow is my birthday. And Teresa got me some of those really cool punch out like metal 3D models.
3D Metal Earth or Metal Earth, I think, is the brand.
You know what's funny?
They're very cool.
Is this why you wanted to talk about trains tonight?
Perhaps. It may have inspired tonight's discussion.
So one of them is a Disney steam locomotive, and the other one is the Main Street Station.
Yes.
So that's what she was pointing at. So I do love the Main Street Station. I actually, a while ago, I built a Lego version of this because I love the station so much. It is one of the first things you see. Mm-hmm. It is one of the, like, ingrained in my mind as, like, Disneyland. It's very Disneyland to me. It's very iconic. I just love it. And so it is a red brick Queen Anne style structure that has what are called mansard roofs, railed roof walks, dormer windows, and a tall clock tower topped by an American flag. So it's the first thing you see, like I said earlier, before you even pass
the thing
turnstile.
That's cool is this was actually one of the few things inside the park that you could see while not even being in the resort area. So remember, way long time ago before Disney California Adventure and the Esplanade was even a thing, that was a parking lot. So you could park your car, shut the door, look over, and there's the peaks of the train station. You know, so I feel like it's almost a little bit more iconic in that way than, say, the castle, because the castle is reserved for paying guests only, whereas this kind of gives you a taste and kind of entices you to come in to see more.
And one of the things about this train station is it matches the rest of Main Street. It's very small. It's very inviting, just like the castle. Mm-hmm. People sometimes disparagingly talk about the castle being small, but I think it was for a point. And so inside, if you have it, I'm sure everybody listening to this has been inside at one point or another.
You never know.
But if you haven't,
things in Disneyland that we just don't take the time to go and appreciate.
That's true. There is a lot of neat things in here.
Oh, it's very cool.
One of the things that I really like in here is there's actually a board on the wall that'll show you like where all the locomotives are.
Oh,
like
going
around the track. Yep. I believe they updated that for Galaxy's Edge, which makes me happy. But there's also some models in there. There's a picture here that looks like there's a chair in there. Maybe you could play some chess on. I don't remember seeing that, but apparently it was there at one time or another. Of course, outside, we talked about this a little bit earlier, that there's kind of
a yellow hand car. Kalamazoo hand car.
Yeah.
So I just like the name.
Right.
But it was actually from Walt's own personal collection. And they assume it was probably a gift to Walt from one of the railroad historians, Gerald M. Best. We don't know that for sure. Mm-hmm. But this was part of Walt's personal collection.
So do you have any memories or anything you want to say about Main Street Station before we moved on?
You know, the one thing that I think one of the a best kept secret that has been leaking out, sitting up on kind of the platform that the train station's mm-hmm. on and looking out across Main Street and just looking down at the castle, down Main Street itself. This is also just, it's great. It's such a great, great view of the park. It's great for photos. So if you and your family want to take photos with Main Street as your backdrop, this is a great place to do it and not have all sorts of people possibly walking in front of your shot yep. or right behind the shot. It's a nice, great place for photos. It's also a really fun place to watch the parades and fireworks, feel, too, because you kind of get a little bird's eye view. Plus, there's benches up there. Mm-hmm. It's just a little bit more relaxed.
You got to get up there early, though.
You do have to get up there early because it was a good secret, but now the secret is out and everybody knows how awesome it is up mm-hmm. there. So it is a little bit more crowded than it was. But the nice thing for the longest time, though, was you could go up there, get a great view, and not be in a crowd, and you kind of be up there by yourself.
Yeah, I totally agree. I love watching the fireworks from up there mm-hmm. Because you get to see pretty much everything from up there. And I think it's a little different now because they got all the projections and stuff that would be hard to see from up there.
Yeah.
But if you're just there for the fireworks or the parade's a great one to see from up mm-hmm. there too.
Yeah.
Because sometimes depending on the parade, some characters are up higher. So you could be almost like eye level with some of them.
I just like taking a moment and kind of taking in the park mm-hmm. from there because it's just cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. If you haven't, highly, highly suggest just hanging up there, taking pictures, whatever. But just, it's a different view of the same park. I love it.
Well, you can watch the flag retreat ceremony from up there, too.
That's true.
So after you leave Main Street Station, if you get on the railroad, the first stop you come to is the New Orleans Square and Frontierland Station. So this is the one that actually has a functioning water tower that is from Walt's era. And this, is, of course, functional. It's where the steam trains get their water mm-hmm. to make the steam mm-hmm. to make the trains go. It also is, I'm sure, if you've ever been at this station waiting for the train, a lot of times the trains will pull up and they'll actually let off a bunch of steam because you can't let so much pressure. And because the trains move at such a slower pace, they can't actually use all of the steam to move the train. So they have to release some of that pressure. So that's what that kind of blow off area is. So the actual station is the original station that was the Frontierland Station. It is based on a turn of the century train depot featured in the Disney live action motion picture So Dear to My Heart.
The other cool thing about this train station stop is if you're quiet and if you really listen, you can hear, what is that called?
Morse code.
Yeah, Morse code beeping. And it's kind of, again, one of those fun little trivia. We probably have actually had this for trivia at some point. But fun, one of those funny little interesting quirks and interesting facts about Disneyland. The Morse code beeping that you hear is actually part of Walt's opening day speech. Mm-hmm. It's not the whole thing. It's just kind of the opening lines from it.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. I think it's a nice little touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can hear yep, ticking there. So Fantasyland, the original train station, actually opened in 1956, right next to Storybook Land and, at the time, the Midget Autopia. And it was taken away in 1966, so 10 years later, when it was rerouted for It's a Small World. Mm-hmm. And another station, so nothing was there for a while. Another station was opened in 1985 when Videopolis opened. That ended up being turning into Mickey's Toontown Station and Fantasyland.
Great themed train station.
It is.
I love it. It's so everything about Toontown. I love the theming in Toontown. Mm-hmm. But I do like that even though this train station isn't actually in Toontown mm-hmm. proper, it's just kind of Toontown adjacent.
Yeah.
I do like that they still very much have the Toontown theme either, because they could have gone more Fantasyland styling with it.
I'm actually surprised, because it's so close to It's a Small World, I'm surprised that they didn't use that same architectural facade. Yeah, yeah, like that would have been really cool too.
It's also kind of one of the more hidden train stations. I don't see a lot of people going, getting on or getting off at that station.
Yeah,
it's just kind of there. So if you're trying to hop on and not have to wait for a huge long line, I do think the Toontown station might be a good option to hop on without having to. Because sometimes when I'm over at the New Orleans Square station, you have to wait a couple rounds because
everybody gets on at Main Street.
So many people. Yeah. There's so many people waiting there. Plus, there's so many people that just got on the train at Main Street that they aren't getting off quite yet. So there's not as many open seats at that point.
Yeah. So it's better to get on at Toontown or Tomorrowland and then just ride it around.
A little further down the track.
Yeah. Because a lot of people get on a Main Street because it's so visible. And then a lot of people, of course, there's a lot of popular attractions right there by Haunted Mansion and stuff in Frontierland and New Orleans Square. So people kind of get on it there. And yeah, you're absolutely right. And then finally, the Tomorrowland station has a... Is this really
a thing? It's wonderful styling.
It features a Googie-style architectural design, and it was originally light blue. The exit signs are still white and blue. It was copper, brown, and orange in 1998 to correspond to the new color scheme, but it's gone through renovations and the new metal railings and pavement. For some reason, it's been left with that 1998 color scheme and not repainted for the 50th. It's very weird. So that's kind of the stations. Let's talk about the different steam engines of the Disneyland Railroad. So let's figure out which ones were actually made by WED.
So when the Disneyland Railroad opened, it only had two steam engines in operation. Engine number one, which was named the CK Holiday, named after Cyrus Kurtz Holiday, which was the founder of the Atkinson and Topeka Railroad, which was later the Santa Fe Railroad. But this locomotive is one of the ones that was built by WED Enterprises. I think that's so cool. Built in Burbank, California. The design was actually inspired by Walt Disney's personal model train engine, the Lily Bell.
Not to be confused with the Lily Bell.
Yes. Yep.
Different. Car that we'll talk about later.
So if some of you may know this, some of you may not, Walt, huge advocate, love trains. He had, I don't even know how to call it. It wasn't a miniature train because he could actually ride it, but it was almost like it was.
I think they just call it a backyard railroad.
That's what I've seen it as. But to kind of explain the scale of it, you didn't actually sit inside of the cars.
You
sat
on top
of the cars.
Yeah.
So I don't know, kind of like a child. Like I've seen these at different amusement parks and whatever for little kids to ride on. And the quote-unquote engineer is sitting on top of the engine. That's kind of the same thought process of the size of what Walt's personal one was. The other opening day steam engine was number two, the E.P. Ripley, which was named for Edward Payson Ripley. He was the first president of the Atkinson, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad. This one was also built by WED Enterprises. So engine number one and engine number two were homegrown, built by WED. So it wasn't until 1958 that the Disneyland Railroad did then expand to a third engine. This one is very cool. It was the oldest steam engine. This is engine number three, the Fred Gurley, which was named after, you guessed it, Fred Gurley, who was the president of the Santa Fe Railroad from 1944 to 1957. It is the oldest steam engine. It is the oldest steam engine operating on the railroad. It was built back in 1894.
Wow.
But it was first put into service back in 1895. So it began its voyage around Disneyland in 1958.
Wow. So engine number four was named after Ernest S. Marsh. It's called the Ernest S. Marsh. And he was president of the Santa Fe Railroad at the time in 1959.
You know, I'm sensing a theme here.
Right. it was built in 1925 by Baldwin Locomotive Works in Philadelphia, the same company that built the Fred Gurley.
Yep. And that one was added to the Disneyland collection in 1959.
Right. And then it would take a long time before another locomotive was added. And of course, the fifth steam engine that joined was the number five, the Ward Kimball, and it was unique as it was named not for an icon of the railroad, but for an icon of the Walt Disney Company. Ward Kimball was a Disney animator and one of Disney's nine old men. Among his many achievements was the creation of Jiminy Cricket. He was named a Disney legend in 1989. He was a railroad enthusiast, very much like Walt Disney was, whose passion for the hobby inspired Walt's own love. The Ward Kimball was put into service on the railroad on June 25th, 2005, and dedicated on February 15th, 2006, as part of the celebration for the 50th anniversary of Disneyland.
So every time we do these deeper dives into things, there's always something that I did not know. And for some reason, I somehow missed that one of our trains was this recent that we actually just got it within the past 20 years.
Mm-hmm,
very cool.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm seeing here that Ward Kimball passed away in 2002, so he didn't even get to see that it was like named after him, but that's still pretty cool. One of the things I just want to comment, we have a...
He needs a window. He got his own train.
Right? So I was just looking, there's a fact sheet about the steam engines, and some of the one thing that just caught my eye as we were sitting here talking was the weight of these things. Mm-hmm. So the CK Holiday weighs, the locomotive weighs 23,200 pounds.
Engine number one, that was.
Yep. Engine number two, the E.P. Ripley, weighs 22,500 pounds. The engine number three, the Fred Gurley, weighs 21,600 pounds. The engine number four, the Ernest S. March, weighs 23,700 pounds. And the Ward Kimball, engine number five, weighs only 20,000 pounds. I did not think that they were that heavy, but I guess it makes sense.
So an interesting fact about engine number five, the Ward Kimball, was that it actually used to live on a sugarcane plantation, and it used to take sugarcane back and forth and haul sugarcane.
That's awesome. I'm glad. What makes me most happy about the engine number five was that it makes me very happy that they are still investing in the railroad, that they would add another locomotive. Because if it was something they were, well, and, you know, Galaxy's Edge and rerouting and stuff. Because I feel like the one attraction that will never leave Disneyland.
Oh, yeah.
Is the railroad.
Oh,
because it's no such way. such a part of
the. That'd be like
the,
tearing down the castle.
It would be. It would be. And I think that people would freak out for sure.
The one thing we were talking about, and we're not going to get into depth on this show about these things, because I feel like we've already talked about them before.
Sure.
But the two dioramas, it is amazing to me that everything else in Disneyland has been updated, has been whatever throughout the years. But those things remain untouched. They're very dated looking, which isn't a bad thing, isn't always necessarily a good thing either. But it's very, very astonishing to me that those two pieces are like history. That's what it looked like from day one. I was under the impression that things like the Tiki Room had not changed throughout the years. And Jose was the same Jose that Walt would have posed with. Not true. So a little eye-opening to me when we learn some of these things, for sure. But it's very amazing to me that those two dioramas are, like, just pieces of the World's Fair that have just kind of been preserved perfectly in Disneyland.
Right.
I can see both sides of updating it versus not updating it. I'm not going to start that debate because we could be here forever. But I just find that fascinating.
I agree. So one of the things, we've talked about all the locomotives, but something I think we should talk about is the passenger cars. So the passenger cars are in a set number series. The 10X series cars were passenger trains and known as Retlaw 1s. Retlaw's Walter, like Walter Disney, in reverse. The 20X series cars are the freight train and are internally known as the Holiday 2 cars. The 30X cars are the Excursion 3 cars, and the 40X and 50X cars are the Holiday 4 and 5 cars, respectively. Each set also has a name. The passenger train was Retlaw 1. The freight train was Holiday Red, formerly Retlaw 2. The Excursion 3 set is the Excursion train, Holiday 4 cars from Holiday Green, and the Holiday 5 cars from Holiday Blue. Whew. What's interesting to me is some of these passenger cars face forward.
I was just going to say, the thing that I notice is just the facing, how you face in them.
And some of them face inward.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, they got rid of, they didn't put out any of the train cars where you were going forward for a while. It was all sideways because they wanted you just looking in. But I feel like the last time I was there, there was a car that I rode that was...
Last time forward. I was there, it seemed like there were different cars on the different trains. So you could be sitting on one that was, you know, kind of like your traditional where you're all forward facing versus the ones that you look inward for. You know, for me personally, I like the inward ones better because wherever you sit, it doesn't matter. You get a great view of the park.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of stadium seating too. The lowest, yeah. You know, the first row is lower than the back row. So you don't have to try and bob and weave and look over people's heads. We did ride one of the forward facing cars last time we were there. And I was the, I don't know how you want to look at it, lucky or unlucky person that got to, I was seated all the way to the left. So it's always fun having the quote unquote window seat.
Sure.
Even though, yes, it is an open air thing. I'm going to call it the window
sure.
seat. But it was very difficult to actually get good views of the park. Because I had a whole row of people in between me and where the opening was for the park. So I felt like I had to kind of constantly be shifting back and forth to be able to look into the park. So that made me a little sad.
So I'm the weirdo. Mm-hmm. And like you want to get stuck on an attraction and get walked off. I would love to be in your spot because I like to look where nobody else is looking.
Oh, I
like to
see all
the behind the scenes crap.
Yeah, I for sure do that.
As we're on the train and everybody's looking over here because it's whatever it is, it's the backside of Jungle Cruise. Well, it's the backside of Jungle Cruise with like the, you know, Bobcat or whatever that's there. Like I'm looking over here going, oh, there's a fence and I can kind of see the backstage area. Like I'm well, that guy.
In my defense, when we were, it was night. So it was dark.
Oh.
So the only interesting thing to look at was the park lit up at night. So there wasn't too much going on my side of the track.
Wow. Wow, that was special. That was special.
That's what we're going to call it, special. Yeah.
That was special.
There wasn't much going on over there.
Well, do you guys have any fond memories of the railroad?
Or any interesting tidbits that maybe we didn't cover that you know about the railroad?
Yeah. If you do, go ahead and hit us up on social media. Send us an email at feedback@dlweekly.net. If you're in our chat, let us know in the chat. We'd love to pass along any information or stories that you guys have about the railroad.
I really feel like we only brush the surface.
Oh,
there's
gosh.
So much about this.
Yeah.
So much.
I will tell you, as we were talking about all this, we were scrolling through pages and pages of information that we just kind of skimmed over because this episode, we could be here all night.
We could have devoted a whole series of episodes to the Disneyland Railroad because there's, yeah, just so much going on. It's very, very cool.
It is very cool.
Well, if you're going to go to the park soon and want to be wearing some sweet DL Weekly swag, head on over to dlweekly.net/store to pick some up.
Well, did you enjoy listening to this episode of DL Weekly? You could support the show for as little as 25 cents an episode. If you want access to the supporter chat that we always talk about, it's only 75 cents an episode. Remember, if you're not a supporter yet, August is a great month to become a supporter because we're going to have a ton of content coming out only for supporters. Some of it will make it to the feed too, but a good chunk of it will be supporter only. So please consider joining supporters like Mark M and head over to dlweekly.net/support.
Well, now it's time to return to James over in Trivia Land to get the answers to this week's trivia.
Yeah, so good quick week for us. Let's see how you did on the answers,
oh,
though.
Oh, geez.
So question one came from listener Richard S., and he wanted to know, true or false, the famous Disney turkey leg has its origins in Disneyland.
And I said true.
I said false.
Teresa's correct.
Ooh, point.
Turkey leg was first introduced at Disney World in Florida and made its way to the West Coast in the late 80s.
Nice.
Dang, I was thinking about that question much differently than how it was asked. I was thinking the turkey leg in general was popularized.
See, that's what I was thinking, too. Well, you're right either way.
Yeah, either way. All right, our second question. The levels of the Mickey and Friends parking structure include Chip and Dale, Daisy, and four members of the Fab Five. But who's been left out?
And I said Pluto.
No, you didn't.
No, you didn't.
Said
you
Pluto.
Said Goofy.
Oh, sorry.
I said Pluto. You said Goofy.
I said Goofy.
I've convinced him it was Pluto.
You should have tried harder because Teresa's right. There's no Pluto.
Pluto?
No Pluto.
Hold on a minute.
Do you want to go back with your, I said Pluto. Oh, that was funny. I said Pluto.
Hold on.
Here's me feeling bad for poor Pluto.
Dang you, memory.
I'm just going to point out the person that has never actually been to the parking garage got that one right versus the one who loves the parking garages.
Sounds like Tag's overdue for another date with the parking garage.
Sorry, I didn't have a thing for Mickey and Friends. I had a thing for Pixar Pals. Thank you.
You had a thing for the tram.
Well, it wasn't a tram question, was it?
Oh, it's
true. All right. All right, well, moving on. Our third question from Daniel is how the Flying Saucers attraction ran for how many years?
I said three and Tag said one, just in case he got confused.
Yeah, yep. I said one. Thank you.
It actually ran a little longer than you think. It made it 5 years before they pulled the plug on it. So, yeah.
I was thinking five, but I thought that was too long.
Yeah, it was a month into its fifth year when it had its final day.
Very nice. Go flying saucers.
And our last question is, which country did most of the hand-carved horses come from on the carousel?
And I think we both said Germany.
You did, and you're both right.
Yay! Yay!
I am amazed that that is where your gut instinct went to. So what's really neat about all these horses is no two of the beautiful horses are alike. They've all been hand-carved, and they're, you know, 90 to 110, probably even older now at this point. And the turntable for the ride actually came from Canada, and that was built in 1875.
Oh, that's interesting. Interesting.
So a lot of nice history in that carousel.
Well, thank you for the trivia, James.
Yeah, you're welcome. I love mixing in these listener questions or having all listener question episodes. So if you want to hear your name and question on the podcast, you can send me an email. It's trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we'll be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.